chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I am thrilled to have Brandon West on the show today. Brandon is the Chief Purpose Officer and founder of FOS Creative. Well, Brandon, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so delighted that we were able to make this work today. Thank you for joining me.
What a pleasure. Super excited to be with you.
I'm excited too. I cannot wait to introduce our listener to you. You have a company. You've got a book that I told you that I've read most of. It's so good. But most importantly, I'm really excited about introducing our listeners to your philosophy on life and your perspective on business, because I just think it's so, so good. And I also want to give a shout out to our mutual friend, Greg Atchison, who actually made the connection for us. And I so appreciate him. And I'm sure you do as well.
I do. Shout out to Greg. He bought a huge box of books and gave them to all of us C12 members. So
it's awesome. I love that. Well, we've got a lot to talk about. Before we go there, I'd love for you to take me back to your childhood. What was your childhood like? Did you grow up? Because I know you went to school in Florida. Did you grow up in Florida?
Yeah, spent a couple of years in Illinois as well. So I know snow life. So actually don't enjoy beaches at all. But where I'm at in Florida, right here is actually known for all of its springs. So freshwater springs, absolutely beautiful. You can dive into them. You can scuba dive into the caverns there that lead you into the aquifers beneath Florida. Really amazing ecosystem that we have here. My wife and I are high school sweethearts from Orlando. Got married when we were 19 years old. Had our first kid at 21, second kid at 24. Started my company at 26. So a couple of years in Illinois, but definitely consider myself a Florida boy.
Yes. Well, you and I should trade places because I do love the beach, but I do know that about you. And we're going to talk about that because you and your wife, Shelly, I think is her name. You guys do scuba diving through the caverns. You love to do cavern diving and stuff, which is really interesting.
There's this older movie where a man is walking above ground throughout a city with this like device in his hand. He walks into like a Denny's and things like that. And he's like telling people, he's like 150 feet beneath us right now. There is a man scuba diving in a cave beneath us. That's just such a cool, you know, some of the places that my wife and I have been cavern diving, you know, you just think about the small fraction of all of humanity that has ever been and seen and touched some of the places that we've been before. It's pretty cool. Definitely getting certified in that was the hardest adult thing I've ever done before. My wife almost gave up at one point It was very challenging, but it's been fun.
Oh my goodness. What a fun thing to do together. What a fun thing to do together. So, but I, you know, as I said, you went to the University of Florida, you got a BA in classical and ancient studies because you really believed, Brandon, that it would be a great foundation for seminary. And I think that was kind of where you were in your own head thinking that was probably your path. But I'd love for you to tell this story. You were about 21 years old and you got connected to a visiting pastor that came to your church and you're sharing your vision with him, your big audacious vision and goals and things like that. And he gave you some advice. What was the advice? I know you weren't too happy about that advice, but
you know, but, there's, you know, there's so many leadership lessons learned in pursuit of career, you know, for the young person, you're just like, what am I going to do when I grow up? I got to give a lecture a few months ago. I've been working on this lecture for 4 years, finally finished it. And it was, I got to give it at the University of Florida to a group of students. And it was called 9 Questions to Ask Yourself to Figure Out What the Heck to Do with Your Life. Because that is just such a hard thing for young people, young listeners here to figure out. And you just realize, like, I'm going to have to journey forward with the clarity I have. And I'm going to have to hold all of those decisions in my future and my career open-handedly so that as God wants to correct and say, you felt like it was here, it's actually right over here. And now I'm not so tied to this. Now all my identity is still not so tied to this that I'm willing to hold my hands open and pivot out to where I need to go. I was headed for pastoral ministry. That's where I thought. I was like, hey, what does the University of Florida have to offer me? I went and did an entire year of family, youth, and community sciences there, thinking that was the best that a secular university had to offer me for seminary. And I switched over to classical studies, Greek and Latin language, Greek and Roman history. And I was hanging out with one of these pastors, a visiting pastor after church, who I respected because I knew of his discipleship of my current pastor. And I was sharing with him some of my dreams. I want to go to seminary. I want to go to blah, blah, blah. And he just goes, how old are you? I was like, 21, sir. And he's like, go get a job, man. Go get a job. Get some life experience. He's like, and another life lesson learned, maybe take a little bit of less hot takes on people you don't know, build a little street cred.
Right.
But man, was that pivotal for me to go, for me to really question, what is God calling me to? Where is that? Once I graduated, I taught classical studies for 4 years. That's Greek, Latin language to high school students as I built a business on the side, and God finally confirmed through 5 men, I want you to go do this full time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many lessons in there that's so packed with so much wisdom, Brandon, because what you just said to me, it was confirmed to you through 5 men. And I am a big believer, I know you are too, in having advisors in your life, trusted advisors. Yeah. There is no way that we can know everything we need to know. But, you know, when we do feel called to do something, you know, get opinions from other people that you trust and other people that know you and love you, right? I think that that is really, really smart. And then not be so jaded about somebody before you actually get to know them, because you said really that what he told you has really impacted. I mean, obviously it has your journey.
Trusted advisors, you know, there is such a beauty in that. And the scriptures speak to that. Wisdom is found in a multitude of counselors. But I think what's interesting about trusted advisors is it takes a lot of vulnerability to actually leverage the value of those people to walk in and go, here's what I'm sure of. Here's what I have no freaking idea about. Mm-hmm. And there's so much vulnerability to just go, here's my life. What do you think? Because then you get dissenting opinions. Even how do I sort through this? There's beauty, but there's a lot of courage that it takes to step. It takes investment as well. I was at the Global Leadership Summit last year, and one of the speakers was talking about loneliness. She shared that 53% of America identifies as lonely, 73% of leaders identify as lonely, and yet loneliness has like the shame culture around it where nobody's raising their hand going, I'm lonely. Will somebody help me? And so there's this loneliness pandemic that's going on. Relationship building to fix that, it costs, this was her research that she had done. It takes 90 hours to develop a friendship with somebody, like where, hey, I know your name, I know your kids, I know what's going on in your life. It takes an additional, on top of that 90, an additional 100 hours, now a total of 190 hours to build a vulnerable friendship where you will call the person at 2 a.m. and be like, I'm breaking down, please come over. 190 hours, like for you to get trusted advisors, like who know you, really know you, can speak in, man, the level of investment that's required there is really challenging. So courage, investment, super necessary for building that trusted advisor like team. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That I just read something myself, Brandon, this week about loneliness, and it is an epidemic. It is an epidemic, but I do believe, and we'll talk about this a lot because you've built such an amazing culture at FOS. I do believe that's where our businesses can come in too, you know, to curate those relationships and friends at work, you know, are so important. We'll talk a lot about that, but you did go on to teach school. But at age 26, as you've already said, you started FOS Creative. This was creative, and this was in 2013. I mean, really, Brandon, and I know that you wouldn't want me to say this, but you guys have been highlighted in Inc. 5000, Fastest Growing Companies, Gator 100, Best Christian Workplace. You've got a myriad of awards behind that now. But tell me how, again, I think you had started the business on the side. Tell us how it all came about, and then tell us what FOS does. What do you do?
Yeah, thanks so much. It's fun to win awards, and our lobby looks really pretty with them all sitting there, but they don't help me sleep well at night. they don't mean that I'm doing a good job of pastoring my family, of leading mm-hmm. my wife, of serving my children. Those are the things God cares about. When I went to these five men in my life because I was making, as a teacher, $18,000 a year, that felt like stable income to me. And I was thinking, am I really supposed to go start? I'm doing this thing on the side. I don't know. I feel like maybe I could go full time. They were all like, yes, you should surrender your $18,000 a year career and go do this. And so it started in 2013. We, at the time when we started, it was mostly graphic design, build websites. But as we say, over the next year of doing that, clients were coming back and they were like, hey, I really love my brand, love my logo, love my website, but I need people to go to it. And very quickly in the company, we realized that this can't just be about things that people like to look at and experience. It has to mm-hmm. be about driving more awareness. And so now, even as a company, 11 years later, we have 24 people on the team headquartered in Gainesville. What we say is that we help small and mid-sized businesses do the only two things that they need to be successful online: build trust and build awareness. If you can build trust with your audiences and build awareness, you will win over and over. And so that's what we help businesses do now, 11 years later.
I love it. Well, you guys have a really unique mission. I love this. You say you believe that businesses should exist for a greater purpose. And so you guys have a greater purpose. You support a myriad of different organizations. I know you're a big United Way supporter. We are too. But you've got two organizations in particular, Brandon, that you guys have supported. What are those organizations and why are they important to you and to FOS?
Yeah. Our mission as a company is to cultivate true flourishing in people and organizations while reflecting the love of Jesus to the world. Our vision statement, where we want to go, what we want to accomplish, what success means to us if the Lord would have it, is to launch 30 care centers around the world that care for women and children impacted by extreme poverty and sex trafficking. Just last month, we launched our 8th center in Guatemala, 1 in North Central Florida, 3 in the Dominican Republic, 2 in Mexico, 1 in Colombia, and now 1 in Guatemala. They serve over 1,200 women and children in extreme poverty and who have been trafficked. Why them? You know, I watched a really interesting video about 2.5 years ago that really changed my perspective on this. As CEOs, as visionaries of companies, we're supposed to dream up a new future. And most of the time, my temptation is to go, it's something new. It's something we've never done. It has to be something bigger and better and crazy. And this video really challenged me to say, where are you planting seeds right now that you've reaped a harvest from in the past? And maybe what's new in your future, maybe what you're supposed to envision is not a new field that you're supposed to go and plant in, but actually to go replant and reharvest in fields where I've already placed you in the past. And for us, it was this question of, well, if we did that, what are the fields where we planted? And women and children, trafficking, poverty, those came up over and over again. And we just said, hey, God, open-handedly, here's where we're going to go. Do you want to bless it? We've partnered with two organizations, one locally and one globally. This is us saying, I don't want to be just about overseas and like, let's send money and support and resources there with being blind to my local needs and brokenness. Mm-hmm. But I also don't want to be so focused there where I'm forgetting like there's other people in the world. There's other hurting around the world. And maybe if I'm not called to go, maybe if I'm not called to be the one to get let down into the well, maybe I'm the one holding the rope at the top, helping the guy, feeding the rope down to the guy who is. And so that local and global impact. Locally, we've partnered with an organization called Anew Gainesville. And Anew is all about restoring dignity and purpose and freedom to women who've been trafficked right here in our local area, which blew my mind that that was happening when I first learned that. Internationally, we've partnered with Compassion mm-hmm. International, one of the coolest, biggest nonprofits. We went on a vision trip with them last year to Guatemala. We'll go again in 2 months to the Dominican Republic to see actually in person two of the care centers that we've helped fund there. We're bringing parts of our team to come and see it as well. Parts of our the family members of our team to go and see like, this is what your mom and dad is a part of. This is what we're actually doing here in this company. I was really convinced by the Lord a few years ago, you have gotten out your wallet and given to these things. I want you to put your hand to them. And so a couple of years ago, just really like I started doing things I'd never done before. I did street outreach with our local sex trafficking nonprofit. I went on my first ever mission trip. I had never done that before and just started getting my life into it and saying, I am fully invested to the places God's called me.
Mm-hmm. Not just your pocketbook, but your hands. Right. In your heart, in your head, and putting the whole thing. I love that so much. I love that so much. Well, I know that one of the things that you say, and Brandon, I love this too. You say you want to be a company that team members never want to leave, clients can't do without, and the world is better for. And I know that you're doing all of those things because of the culture that you're building there and like even you saying like taking team members with you so they can see how you're making the world a better place by the things that you guys are doing with folks. But yeah, I believe that there's many things truly that make you guys very unique and your culture unique. But what I'd love for you to expand on a little bit, Brandon, is how you start the first 15 or 20 minutes of your weekly meetings.
Oh, that's so good. I love talking about culture, but the truth is culture is so stinking difficult.
Yes.
We can talk all, they have a good culture, they have a bad culture. Why? How is it possible? We can walk into a business and within 90 seconds of just being there and experiencing and being greeted, we can already have a sense of someone's culture. And the reason that frustrates me is that culture is wildly elusive. It is assessed in very small things. It is assessed in very small things and then assessed and then is critiqued at a very large level. Mm-hmm. All these small things lead up to, they have a great one. All these small things lead up to, they have a horrible culture. That's kind of horrifying for us as leader. It calls us to much greater amounts of daily, moment by moment, choice by choice faithfulness that we're called to as a leader. For us, like, how do you take these things that you say, this is our mission, this is our vision, these are our values? How do you translate that into you're really authentically, genuinely this type of company and this type of leader? It's hard to do. At our team meetings, we have them once every other week. They are an hour and a half long. It used to take 15 to 20 minutes to do this. It rarely takes any less than 40 to 45 minutes now to do this in our company. Wow. There are 24 people on our team. And what we do, I just ask my integrator, our operations manager, she runs the meeting. She asks one question to our team. Where have you seen our values in action in the past 2 weeks? And for 40 to 45 minutes, we go around the room and people are taught on day one in their first 3 hours with me in a conference room about our mission, vision, values, and how to do this very thing. Where we just say, shout out to so-and-so on the team for such and such a value. When you did this very specific behavior, here is the very specific outcome. And each person will come with 1, 5, 8, different shout outs around the room. And we're celebrating each other on this team, visually, verbally, publicly, in front of one another, giving thanks for each person for specifically fulfilling, creating this elusive culture. The things that you celebrate, you will see repeated. You want to create a culture? Celebrate those things over and over. And people will go, I could do that. And all of a sudden you're seeing new leaders rise up in your company.
It's so true. It is so true. And that is, wow, what a beautiful way to onboard new people when they see that kind of thing happening to Brandon, you know, because they're like, wow, that is so cool. I want to be like Brandon over here. And I think that's, and just having that attitude of gratitude, I think is really, really important too. But I just think that's really cool. Well, we were just talking before the podcast started, and you were telling me that you have these little cards. Tell us about BAM.
When I started my company 2 years ago, I was told that there were two types of companies that I could start. I could either start a lifestyle business where I just am trying to grow as much recurring revenue as possible and get myself out of it so I can go play pickleball all day long. Or my second option was I could build an equity company. I'm trying to raise up that EBITDA and our earnings as high as possible so that one day I could sell out, walk away with a bunch of money, and feel really good about what I had done. Neither of those are bad. They're fine. They're just not enough for me when leadership is hard. They're not enough on the hard days when you've lost a big client, you lost a key employee, you're grieving personally because of some hard thing that's gone on in your life. The last employee check-in that you had, they roasted you. Like, what's enough to get out of bed? And I'm so grateful that about 5 years ago, I was introduced to a different type of business, not lifestyle, not equity. We call it business as a ministry, where what we're actually trying to produce from the company is not a product or a service, but what we're actually exporting from this organization is love, care, compassion, ministry, evangelism. A couple of years ago, as we were operationalizing business as a ministry throughout every aspect of FOS, we were asking this question, like, what could we do very practically to help people get their eyes off their keyboard and to raise their eyes up to a greater purpose that they're working on today? One of the things we developed were these BAM cards, these business as a ministry cards. We have one for each month. This is our fourth deck that we've done now. And each of them for each month just has one question on them, one question for the day. Each team member is given a full deck for their home computer and for their computer at work. And every day when we walk in, we're just all trying to ask ourselves one question to get our eyes lifted onto our greater purpose. This month, as I pause now, what am I grateful for today? With one of our key employees in the hospital right now in the ICU, what a question for us to ask. She joined for the first time in 2 weeks, our Monday stand-up yesterday. And I got to talk about this BAM card in front of her with her on the call. She was in the ICU, like not on camera, but just joining via audio only on Zoom. And I got to say, hey, Janelle, you're the person showing us how to do this right now as a team, to be grateful in the middle of everything. How do you take a company and operationalize ministry? I think you do very practical things to help people see that what they're doing is bigger and better than the to-do list that they have in front of them.
Yeah, that is so good. Well, Brandon, I'm going to ask you one more question, then we do need to take a quick break. I want to get into some practical strategies for branding and marketing. And then I'm going to want to spend the remainder of our time truly on your book, which is called It Is Not Your Business to Succeed, which I absolutely love. But can you describe for our listeners the key differences between like branding and advertising? You talk about storytelling. I'm a big proponent of storytelling. I believe people will remember a story more than they'll remember anything else that you say. Storytelling is very critical. You've written about five strategies, and I'm sure that there are a lot more where a company can use these strategies to build a trusted brand. But can you talk about some of those? Can you touch on those very briefly?
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of these things that you mentioned, branding, advertising, marketing, they probably they all sit in one ecosystem. Call it whatever you want. You could call that ecosystem branding. You could call that ecosystem marketing, or you could call it public relations as well. In all of those things, we're trying to leverage every tool we can to reach new customers. But the truth is, and this is what I spoke to earlier, and this is really where we land as a company, is the only brand worth bringing to market is one that is full of trust. So branding then really is all about taking who a business is behind the scenes, at its core, in its identity, at its best, and bringing that message to the public with as much authenticity as possible. Meaning if you're valuable behind the scenes, you've got a great process, you've got a great team, let's just authentically bring that to market. That's how we're going to build trust, showing that we're competent, showing that we're credible, showing that we're authentic, showing that we're full of empathy, that we advocate for our customers. And now the customer is going, wow, you're really good at what you do. Other people trust you. You seem like everything that's going on is actually real and genuine. You care about me. Where do I sign? Outside of that, that's call that branding, call that PR. Outside of that, then all we need to do, if we've created trust, is we just need to create awareness. And so now it's about channel competencies and being where your customers are. And advertising is paying those dollars to somebody to put up your business where you are not currently located. Organic inbound marketing then is all about offering the right content and white papers and webinars and articles and thought leadership and videos and content so that people who are searching for you go, what are my options? Here's one. Wow, lots of trust, low trust over here. I'm going to go ahead and fill out this contact form here. And this is where trust and awareness become these two prongs of a success strategy online for a company. That's how we think about all of those competencies working together.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. So, you know, let me ask you this, because I know sometimes, you know, people will say, oh, you know, it's so hard to measure. It is so hard to measure. We're going to talk a lot about measurement, because you talk about how do you measure success of a leader? How do you measure success of a parent? We're going to talk about that. But, can we go into like some practical things about how you go about measuring the success of a campaign or a brand?
Yeah, absolutely. Measurement is the linchpin. Like that's what it, I've said to people, like they've come to me in the past and they're like, hey, I'd give you $10 million if you could prove to me how that $10 million is going to turn into $100. I'd give you $100 million if you could tell me how that would turn into $1 billion. Like if measurement and math and analytics and success ratios were as constant and predictable and easy as we would like to make it seem, everybody would be investing the $100 million knowing that they'd get $1 billion. Out yeah. of it. I think in the end, you're trying to just ask the most leading questions that you can. That's all you, because even as we start to get in here to measurement with leadership and faithfulness and parenting and all that, the best that you can do is control the front end of the funnel. And this is what's so hard about leading and lagging indicators in business, a lagging indicator of business. Did you make money? Medium yeah. indicator. Did you even bill the client? You know, it's so easy to land work and they just do a bad job invoicing people. But on the way front of the end, now you're asking questions like, well, did I share a story on social media? Did I send out an email this week? Did I post a new article? Did I write the ebook that I was promising? Did we produce the video content that we said? At the front end, we're just asking, are you doing the right things? That's where measurement is most critical, in leading indicators with faithfulness, with brand integrity, with authenticity, to go and to share and put out and then measure. Am I getting eyeballs on it? Are people engaging with it? Are people getting there and just bouncing off? It's not giving them the right thing. All of these indicators are the leading key performance indicators, KPIs, that we want to track to say whether or not we think anything's ever going to be successful if God would see it that way.
Yeah, that's good. That is good. Well, one more thing, and we are going to take a quick break. I know that you love the Ritz-Carlton brand. I do too. You've studied the Ritz-Carlton brand, the gold standard, right? I don't know if you have or not, Brandon, but I've heard Horst Schulze speak a couple of times. He was a co-founder. Amazing. Amazing. What, you know, they were, for our listeners, you may or may not know this, but the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award, they've won that twice. And that is not an easy award to win. I worked for McDonnell Douglas back in the day before Boeing bought them. Brandon. And I remember the Malcolm Baldrige Award, and it's not an easy award to win. But, you know, why do you believe, what are some of the things that you believe that make them the gold standard as it relates to brands? Mm.
I was on a podcast maybe 6 or 7 years ago when somebody asked me, what's a brand that you look up to? And dang, I just like paused so hard. And I walked out of there going, I need to look up and learn from like big brands that I know, like, and trust. And from that research, from that moment, came some of my affection for the Ritz-Carlton brand. Reading through their book, The New Gold Standard, is the match that lit the whole system on fire. When I finished that book, I called my wife and I said, hey, I'm going to do something crazy and spontaneous. It's a Friday afternoon. Pack your stuff, pack up our children. We're going to go down to Orlando. We're going to stay at the Ritz-Carlton tonight. I need to see, I need to taste everything that I've just read about for the past few weeks. And we went down there and I just began to test a few of the things that I'd read about in the book. This whole idea that each employee has this blue card on them that has their mission, vision, values, and their commitments and their culture standards. And it's every person is supposed to have this blue little thing on them at all times. So I'm like, okay, here we go. Pull up to the front gate. Welcome, Mr. West. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I'm walking in, I go to the front desk and we're getting checked in. And I just said, do you have one of the Ritz-Carlton cards on you? And she's like, oh, sir, I've been working here for 15 years. Here it is, sir. And I was like, wow, can I see it real quick? And she hands it to me. I'm opening up. It's like, you know, worn out because of all these years. I'm like, wow, this is so awesome. I'm like reading their values and culture. I'm just like, oh, I love this organization. And she's like, sir, why'd you ask me for it? I said, I've been studying it. I was hoping, could you get me one of these from the HR department? And she's like, sir, I want you to have mine. I'll go figure out how to get another one. I want you to have mine, sir. And I was like, I can't. No way. Please. Sir, you must take it. And it was in those moments where you just realize, like, okay, this company's actually committed. In the book, he says that it actually wasn't very hard for them to become the number one best rated hospitality brand in the world. He said, all we had to do is do what customers expect over and over. That's mm-hmm. it. He said the hardest thing was staying there. Because as soon as you set that standard, now everybody else is chasing that standard and you're having to lift it over and over again. Chasing that new gold standard, I mean, that's Simon Sinek's infinite game that we sort of surrender to. We realize, like, this isn't a game we're going to win. We just have to chase the highest and best over and over again. And I just respect brands that I can learn from that seem to do that with faithfulness, with consistency.
Yeah, so good. Well, we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Brandon West on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Brandon West. So Brandon, I want to talk about this, and then I want to dig into your book a little bit, and we'll talk about Something Extra, and I would love to be on here with you for 5 hours, but we're not going to do that to our listeners, and I know you have other things to do, but one of the things that I have seen, and I'm sure you have too, is this idea of burnout, and really, as a leader goes, so goes an organization. So taking care of yourself and being the best version of you is so important for your team, right? So what are some of the strategies that you yourself have employed to, number one, keep from burning out? How do you stay energized on a daily basis for your team and for your family, of course, too?
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. Who has not experienced burnout at some point in their life? Who has not just felt like you were physically and emotionally, spiritually just going to collapse at some point? I agree with that. I use two phrases very carefully. Burnout is what I want to avoid, but what I want to be is actually very close. I want to be poured out. And the Apostle Paul talks about this. He says, my life has been poured out like a drink offering, like a libation to the people around me and for the glory of God. I don't want to be burnt out, what I want to be is intentionally poured out. But in order for me to do that and avoid the one and invest in the other, I have had to just surrender to the idea that some level of, here's a cultural buzzword, self-care, that some level of that is actually important. One of the talks that I love to give, got to give it to two groups of students at UF recently, I call it unselfish self-care. Unselfish self-care, that there's a way to invest in you for other people. Where it's not just, I just need the next reason to just like love on myself. No, I need to care for myself so that I can love on, lead, and care for other people. And so for me, I've just had to get to the place where I realize that. I've realized that through my own physical struggles, emotional struggles, this whole idea of I can't lead and love at home because I'm so worn out from work. Okay, here's what you need to do. Give less at work. You know, it's like, and there have been times I've come home. I remember a date night with my wife once where I swear I was catatonic that night. I had just been railed on by an employee and I just felt like I was like a filled up dummy sitting at the table with her trying to have dinner while she was talking to me. I was emotionally absolutely empty in every way. And it's moments like that where you just realize like, I got to know what my warning signs are, where I'm headed towards burnout. So that I can invest in self to care well for others and be poured out, not burn out.
Yeah, that is so good. I love that. Poured out, not burn out. Yeah, I love that whole passage there with the Apostle Paul. Well, let's talk about your book for just a minute. It's Not Your Business to Succeed. I would highly, highly, highly encourage our listeners to go out and get the book. It is really, really good. You know, one of the things that you talk about, the first chapter, is the fatal flaw of outcome-based thinking. And as leaders, it's all about the results. It's all about the outcome. It starts with another one of my heroes of the faith, who is Francis Chan. Love Francis Chan. He says, our greatest fear should not be a failure, but of succeeding at things in life that don't really matter. Wow. I mean, Brandon, it reminds me of that quote, that adage that says you don't want to get to the end of your life and realize that the ladder was against the wrong wall, right? So good. You know, you go on and to ask the question, so how do you measure success as a leader? You know, if there's a fatal flaw in outcome-based thinking, how do you do that? And can you summarize what you think and your philosophy on that?
Yeah, I think any of us could actually very easily define what the outcome-based mindset is, because we live like it is our default. It is what our culture trains us to do from a very young age. You don't get to pass this grade unless you get good grade, you know, just every, like from the youngest, the outcome-based mindset is I am what I produce. That is who I am as a person, my identity, my success as a leader, my definition of failure and success, who I am is tied up in what I produce, in the outcomes that I get, in the results that I'm able to achieve. But the problem is I cannot guarantee any of my results and outcomes. Is it not a global pandemic that like causes us all to, you know, it's like, I have this great goal for the year, this great vision. And 3 months in, you're going, probably I'm going to need to change this. You realize like, I'm not in control. I am not in control of my outcomes. The leader, we work so all day long to figure out what are the results? What are the metrics? How do I measure this? How do I get what I want? And when we surrender this idea of I can't control them, it forces us to ask a new question. And for me, that has been the way that we define success. I think traditional success is I am successful or I will be successful when I fill in the blank.
Yes.
And I think actually God has a different purpose where success for us isn't about what we produce, but what we chase. And so faithfulness for us, being faithful to what God's called us to do, who God's called us to be, being faithful to that, being faithful to love and to lead, that's actually how we define success. I wrote in the book that I am successful. This is the mindset we need to tell ourselves. I am successful If alone I am faithful, regardless of whether or not I am effectual. And I think about people in the Bible who did that. You know, they're like, I'm just thinking of the prophet in the Old Testament. God's like, hey, here's what your ministry is going to be for your life. For the next year, I want you to lay on your side naked, cook your food over some feces. People walking around going, were they just walking around being like, you are the most successful prophet I've ever seen. This prophetic art installation, it's gorgeous. Well done. What must I do to be saved? I think they were walking around going, you're an idiot. You are crazy, man.
Right.
And God's going to welcome him into heaven one day. And he's going to go, well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your master. The way that we define success, not God's way.
Yeah, so true. And I love what you say about that, Brandon. You said that verse is well done, good and faithful servant, not good and fruitful servant. Exactly. Completely different measurement, completely different yardstick, you know, is what I say. But I love, you know, you've got on page 30 and 31, I love this because you've got kind of, you know, the two different Ben Franklin, if you want, or, you know, the T account here, the outcome-based mindset versus the faithfulness. So like results, you know, outcome is I expect positive results from all the hard work that I put in. Faithfulness mindset says, I trust God to do as he pleases with my work. When it goes well, I thank him for the things I don't deserve. When it doesn't, I surrender to his better plan. People, you know, outcome is I lead as needed because people are a means to an end. But the faithfulness says, I lead well because I see leveraging the influence I have with other people as a calling of God on my life. I mean, you've got all these marriage and parenting for those who maybe are married or have children. The outcome based on I make sacrifices in my marriage and family is necessary to get the outcomes I want in my career and my hobbies. But the faithfulness says, I make the sacrifices necessary in my business and personal interests to ensure that my marriage and my children maintain priority in my schedule. So I love what you said because you talk a lot about that. This is not just faithfulness in business. This is not faithfulness thinking in business. This is faithfulness in every aspect of our life. And that is our families, putting our families first. You said, if you're working 100-hour weeks, and that is bringing you home, you know, for 10% of energy for your family. As you said it before, work less. You said that your business, your mission, your ministry, whatever it is that you're doing with your day job, it does not deserve your family. Mm-hmm. So don't sacrifice your family. And those are really great words of wisdom, Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, confession, this lifestyle, the faithfulness mindset, it's actually much harder than the outcome-based mindset. Outcome-based mindset, I know exactly what to do all day long. Just work nonstop. Just get the stuff done. Never, you know, just burn out. The faithfulness mindset is much harder because now I have to go, how do I prioritize the plates I'm spinning? Which ones do I let fall? Which ones do I crash myself? And which ones do I keep spinning by God's grace that he's going to help me to do to lead well? It's hard. I have to correct myself back from the outcome-based mindset on a faithfulness mindset on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. My favorite story in writing the book was when my wife first read the book. At one point, she's reading the Google Doc version of it, commenting on things, you know, editing things. One section, maybe a third, two-thirds into the book, she comments on it and she says, babe, mic drop. This was so good. Can I remind you of this later? And she just knows. She knows. Like, hey, you've written this. This is excellent. There's going to be a time in your life where you're going to have to go, wait. I am totally operating out of an outcome-based. I can do it so easily. I can do it when my kids are sick and I'm thinking, I can't get around you right now because I have this really important meeting coming up. And now they're going, where's dad? I miss him. Does he love me? Does he care for me? All these different, the small little things that say, are you going to be faithful? Are you going to love well? Are you going to lead well? What does that look like? And it's easy for me to just jump back to you. Outcomes.
Yes. Yeah. I cannot agree more. I cannot agree more of that. And sometimes you get the accolades from the outcomes. You don't always get the accolades in the other, right? So that's why a lot of people are drawn to that. But Brandon, there's just so much more. Listeners, go get the book. Go get the book. Dig in. I know it's going to bless you. I know that you know, this faithfulness mindset, you know, is going to set you free. You know, it's not easy, but it will set you free. It will set you free from the way the world thinks about it. Brandon, real quick, this is called Something Extra. I think I may know what your Something Extra is, but I'm not going to put words in your mouth. What is the Something Extra that every leader needs?
Yeah. The word that you just used is so beautiful. What we need is freedom, but the something extra that that comes with is a different mindset, where we release ourselves from believing that we are what we produce. We release ourselves from the control that we want over our outcomes, over our relationship, over our marriage, over our children, over our businesses, over the people that we lead. And we just go, the something extra that I need is a new mindset. And this faithfulness mindset winds up changing everything. It changes the way that I walk into work. It changes the type of business that I want to run. It changes the things that I now measure in my business. My business is a vehicle for something greater, for a mission, for ministry, for love, care, and evangelism. I'm actually trying to operationalize and create a budget and create a system and an ecosystem all built around making that happen, not just getting the next buck, not just profit management. This whole idea of, oh, well, our business is all about people over profit. It's people over profit. And I'm just asking myself, like, would my P&L, my profit and loss statement, would that prove me a liar? Could people look at my profit and loss statement and say, yeah, this person's leading from a different mindset. They care about something different. They're truly people over profit. They're purpose over potential. That's the question I'm asking myself. And I think the something extra that all of us need, because I see the need in myself, is to go, I'm actually just meant to be a branch. John 15, that apart from God, apart from Jesus Christ, I confess, I can do nothing. I can do nothing of value. But if I remain in him, if this branch just stays connected to the vine, that vine has and has promised to provide everything that I need for life and for fruitfulness and faithfulness in the things that God's called me to do. All I need to do, be a branch, abide.
Be a branch. Faithful. Absolutely. I told you that's one of my favorite verses. I love that verse, be a branch. And I cannot wait to get my t-shirt because I know you're going to design one for me. All right, Brandon. Gosh, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much. I cannot wait to introduce our listeners to you. And, blessings on the rest of your day, and God's continued blessings on you, your family, FOS, the people at FOS, all the things that you guys are doing.
Thank you so much, friend. It was a joy.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.